Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny.
And welcome to our very special series entitled The Skeleton Boys Podcast Presents Halloween, A Journey. We're going to go back and review the first...
Say it five times fast now. No. The audience at home demands it.
Well, I'm going to probably read it like three more times with our series, our special Halloween series. We're going to go back and we're going to review the first original eight movies. None of that Rob Zombie trash or any of the new Halloween stuff. Or what are they, legacy sequels or something, remakes? Whatever they are. I haven't seen them. Anyways, this week we're kicking it off, of course, with Halloween and Halloween 2. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll go into our first thoughts and then we'll go to deep spoiler analysis. So I thought a fun way to kind of kick off the conversation for our series is to talk about John Carpenter, who I know we both very much admire his movies, his music.
I appreciate that. His general. Yes, I am also a carpenter.
Yeah. And yeah, and we're going to talk about just, we decided to do top five John Carpenter movies. I don't think there's going to be any controversy, but the last time we did this, the show almost completely fell apart.
Strap in, kids. So this will be another 3-hour episode.
Yeah.
Wild roller coaster on the teacup ride.
I mean, yeah. I just thought that it'd be fun to talk about John Carpenter. I mean, when you really go back and look at like his filmography, there's like so many big, giant, important movies he's done throughout his career.
Yeah, and then the early 2000s happened.
and then he got old. But I kind of... Yeah, then I kind of like admire that he's like old, bitter, and just likes to hang out in his house and play video games.
Yeah, he never lost that look too. Like he still looks like some dude who did a shit ton of cocaine in the 70s.
Yeah.
It's a good look.
That's a good look, yeah. I think eventually we all just settle in on what we're going to look like. I don't think I've changed my look in like... 10 years since you've known me.
That's true. So. I changed my look. I go from like baby-faced looking fuckboy to long hair stoner like every 4 years, but I haven't changed my look in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to, you just want to talk a little bit about John Carpenter and his movies before we can dive into our top
five? Yeah, let's do it. Let's see. I think he's only actually made like two movies. Escape from New York and Escape from LA. So that's all we need to talk about. No, he's got so many things. What, like the Body Bag series and the, Masters of Horror. I think he did one, right? I think.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. The Ward.
Two. He did two.
Right? Oh, yeah, two. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we won't talk about the Ward. It's okay.
The Ward. That's I feel like The Ward is a movie he tried to like just recapture something, but there he's clearly was it was past him. Like it was just he had nothing left to say or give or however you want to put it.
Yeah,
it's just
to me The Ward was kind of like his attempt. I mean, even though I think it was before, but his like sort of what Sam Raimi was trying to do with Drag Me to Hell. But for me, Drag Me to Hell worked. Even though it was like super...
Yeah.
Like, what if Army of Darkness had more money? And that's what it felt like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like he should have went... he should have even went smaller, even smaller budget. But I think like Blumhouse wasn't around. Like the equivalent of a Blumhouse movie wasn't around. So he was probably doing it with...
No, you had what?
Like a bigger budget.
You had Asylum. You had, Ghost something?
Yeah.
The other... If people aren't familiar, yeah. Asylum does classics such as Snakes on a Train. And they basically do the B version of every good horror movie.
Yeah,
I'm being generous.
Yeah.
C version.
That's true. Yeah. But Carpenter. He's definitely one of my favorite directors.
Oh, yeah.
I just genuinely love all his movies. Unfortunately, I feel like he's in pop culture is considered sort of the genre director, right? He does like mainly horror, science fiction, but he does those things really well, right?
Yeah.
But there's movies he's made like Starman, the TV movie, Elvis. Right. He did with Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell. And I feel like these movies are interesting because they show a different side of him. They're like sensitive. They're, you know, optimistic.
I will say Starman though is still science fiction. Like it's still, yeah,
it is.
It is more lighthearted than his other movies, but yeah.
True. I look at that movie more for it being like kind of a romance movie. You're right. It is definitely science fiction, but I see it as more of like a love story.
Yeah, I fucking love that movie.
And for him to tackle.
I was getting confused with, I forgot what other movie though, but that's the one with the Purple Lotus or whatever, right? The one thing they were able to like, hold on, let's run down this movie real quick. Cause it is a very interesting, like John Carpenter. And this is like before Halloween, right?
After
Halloween, obviously, is what I said. fuck, come on, IMDb, stop fucking up.
Load. Yeah.
You sound smart.
God,
I probably shouldn't say this, but I like put my foot in my mouth during a, what's a different word for date? So I don't say date. Anyway. I like totally put my foot in my mouth because I said, oh yeah, this is how somebody got their start. And they were like, he was in movies before that. And I was like, fuck, you're right. I even reviewed a movie where he was in it and I looked it up and I realized that I was wrong about this the whole time. And I just fucking said it right now. I'm a lying asshole. I gotta go.
Yeah.
So welcome to John's life where he's real sure about something and always wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, no, that movie's really good.
It's really good.
I feel like he didn't make any bad movies until the late 90s, maybe, sort of. But I would say early 2000s for sure.
Yes, yeah. I think I'm fan of all his movies, even some of his his 90s movies, like Village of the Damned.
Yeah, that was okay.
That movie never worked. It was okay, though. Okay. You know, it's famously known because it's Christopher Reeve's last movie before his accident.
Right.
So that's kind of fun to watch him. Christy Alley's in it. Yeah.
So if you don't like her,
even Memoirs of Invisible Man is really good.
Christy Alley's crazy. Yeah.
That movie's excellent.
I love that movie. Really, yeah. Good. There you go. Well, another movie that's like teetering between horror and science fiction only because it's Invisible Man, but it's a very science fiction-y movie.
But yeah, yeah.
I feel like it was during that time, Chevy Chase, right? It was during that time where Chevy Chase also did that other film. What was it called? Where like he was like down on his luck. I think he just got broken up. And then he gets like some sort of sludge dumped on him. And then all of a sudden he has like powers of some sort, but he's going like cuckoo.
Yeah.
And he's trying
Big Trouble?
I don't remember.
I mean, we could look that up, but I think I'd rather guess.
I definitely know it off the top of my head. I'm not.
Know it off the top of my head.
Think really hard. Chevy Chase.
Isn't it?
Off the top of my head that he's been in for sure.
No, it's not called that.
It's got like a funny name. It's like it's definitely from the 70s, right? Oh, Modern Problems. I'm pretty sure it's called Modern Problems.
Modern Problems. That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, that movie sucked. That was a bad movie.
You didn't like it?
No, I mean, I have a lot of memories of it, but I mean,
I rewatched it, and it is. I think it's awesome. It's so weird. Like, I think I remember not liking it when I was younger because I didn't quite get it. I didn't quite get the like. But now, today, you have humor like fucking Tim and Eric and shit like that. So my idea of humor has changed dramatically. And now when I rewatch this that movie, I'm like, God, this movie's fucking strange. It's so depressing, but like. It's almost like a Zuckerberg made that movie. Did a Zuckerberg make that movie?
Yeah.
No.
No.
Totally. No. Right? Ken Shapiro, Ben's father.
Yep. Zuckerberg. The fifth Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
Whatever. Ken Shapiro.
Oh, anyway, yeah. Memories of an Invisible Man. I love that movie.
I mean, honestly, the one movie I feel like is his most uneven. It's probably before The War. The War is probably his least successful movie because it's just victim of being boring. Like, it's not a very interesting movie.
Ghost of Mars was fucking terrible, though.
That's what I was going to say. Ghost of Mars is probably his first, like, out and out, really, like...
God, this is bad.
Like, I see the concept, but nothing worked about the movie. Yeah, it was just all over the place. It was a bit of a mess overall.
Just weird. He only got stellar actors in that, right? I'm just kidding.
yeah,
nothing against Ice Cube. Please don't kick my ass, Ice Cube, because I know you're listening. These are like one of my number one fans.
After what Pam Grier's Academy Award nomination, decided to do Ghost of Mars. Yeah. So I think that's how that worked. Oh, man. She's like, I can't get any more work. I've been Oscar nominated. All right,
I'm overqualified.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So give me your top five Carpenter movies. Start with number five.
Are we going to do this the same way we did it the previous time with Nicolas Cage?
Which we did.
I would go first, you would go first, and we would go like, which is your five?
And we went just...
And we just kind of briefly talked why.
And then...
I don't know about briefly, but we did talk about why.
Maybe that's the one part we should just cut down.
The brief talk?
The brief
talk. I can't brief. Yeah. Okay.
I can't brief.
All right.
Unless we have like... Yeah. Just talk about it briefly, yeah. Okay. What would be your number five? Yeah.
For Johnny's Carpenter list... Coming in at number five, we have Escape from L.A. A little controversial. It had to make my top five. It was the first Carpenter movie I saw in theaters. And I remember that movie and I was like, this movie's fucking badass. And it didn't like click in my head that it was like Escape from New York sequel, because I think at the time I wasn't a huge fan of that movie yet. It was too adult for me, I think. Okay. And L.A. is a little more palatable for somebody younger, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember seeing the trailer a lot in the theaters and thinking it was very memorable, even though I couldn't make heads or tails of it, only that I kind of put together was a sequel of another movie. So I was like, yeah, this is like a big movie franchise or something.
And I'm like 99% sure I went and saw that movie mostly, you know, because my older brother, Mauro, is like, and my father and my mother are all like Carpenter fans. They went to watch it because they liked Escape from New York. And also because it was a double feature with Robin Williams' Jack. So I saw Escape from L.A. and then saw Jack.
Oh, my God. What the? That's,
you don't get double features like that in 2021. Yeah, I'll tell you that.
Fucking that! I mean, you got Coppola and Carpenter, double
the
feature.
The juggernauts of film,
nice
battling it out.
Yeah, the washed up 70s directors on their last rattle of their careers. That's a good one. That's a very good one. I think you and I both picked like lesser known, less favorite Carpenter movies. I picked. The Fog.
Oh man, The Fog.
That's my number five.
The Fog had to be pushed down to my number six. But it's definitely one of my
love
favorites.
Love the Fog.
Not to be confused with that weird remake. The real tweeny remake.
Yeah, Tom Welling, right? Welling, Superboy, Superman, was in it. So I picked The Fog because I used to have, in my more movie obsessed days, I used to, when I was basically a teenager, I used to watch The Fog. I used to make that the first movie I watched on New Year's Day. So like at midnight, or 1 or 2 o'clock, I tried to watch it. And as is a tradition, I tried to like watch it every year, you know, stuff like that. Eventually I fell off. I stopped watching it. But the reason why was because of that opening line, right? Where he's like, 12 is the witching hour or whatever. And I thought that was like a fun way to start the year.
Nice.
To watch a horror movie.
And you get to watch Tom Atkins in all his glory. Has Tom Atkins ever play a different character other than Tom Atkins? No. But that's not why you hire him.
He's Tom Atkins. He's fucking Tom
Which
Atkins.
We will be reviewing in Halloween 3.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's the main actor in this
fucking
movie.
Tom Atkins.
And Adrienne Barbeau, like one of my first crushes.
Yeah, she is amazing. She's excellent in this movie. So there's just so many good actors in that movie. Like Janet Leigh's in it. Hal Holbrook is in it.
Jamie Lee.
All these really fucking amazing actors. Jamie Lee's in it. Just fucking. Carpenter always worked with really great character actors.
Yes.
Throughout his whole career. And they just kind of keep popping up all over his movies and stuff. So I like that he kind of used the same.
And Tommy Lee Wallace, who was the main pirate ghost, is the director of the third Halloween movie.
Yeah, I read that. I read that today about the second one. I was reading trivia.
Art director slash, I think, production designer. I think this is before the title production designer came around, but he was the art director for Assault on Precinct 13.
Oh,
another. Excellent.
So I like that, again.
I was going to say another great film that didn't make my list, but I love that film too. Just
off of PC-13,
fucking score.
Yeah.
Like,
excellent movie.
Bah, 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 bah.
Yeah.
Bah, 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 bah.
Iconic.
Bah, 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 bah. Yeah.
Cool. So what's your number four?
Coming in at number four for Johnny's Carpenter list. They Live.
They Live.
I came here to do two things.
Did not make my list.
Chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Yeah.
How could this not make your list that epic, like, awkwardly long, like, 3.5-4 minute fight scene?
Yeah, there's so many good things about it.
Yeah. Awesome. And just Roddy Piper was always one of my fucking favorites.
I feel like there's one movie that is not on your list that's on my list that I like more, which is why I think they're, like, interchangeable.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, no, I love They Live. Yeah, so we'll get to it, but I love They Live. It's a movie I think I found later. I feel like the five that I chose were the ones I like grew up with, like I loved and just like grew up with and I remember very fondly. They Live,
same here then,
was something I watched very much later in my life.
They Live, I watched, I think, because of my mom, of all people.
Mm-hmm.
She really loves that movie.
Yeah. No, it's an excellent movie.
What do you have at number four?
Oh, I have, it's going to be very controversial, Escape from New York.
Whoa. There's another one? Wait, they did Each Coast? What?
Wasn't it? Famously, they were supposed to do Cleveland as well. I'm still waiting on that one.
Oh, like, yeah. Oh,
because
man.
You should about Cleveland.
I hope like Carpenter has been actually working on this film the entire time. He's just waiting to die so that they'll release it.
Escape from Cleveland. Escape from New York. I mean, that movie is just...
Adrienne Barbeau again.
What can we say about it? I mean, it's just like... Yeah. It is... I love that it's basically Snake Plissken is like a Western character and he's just like he's forced to do this thing that he doesn't want to do. And he's like not a very good guy. I mean, even though you grow to kind of like him or whatever, stuff like that. I mean, he's just it's an iconic character. Everybody, so many people have dressed up with him
including me.
As Halloween, right? It's like, it's good.
Yeah. I got to say, actually, for a handful of Halloweens, I was just trying to be a different Kurt Russell Carpenter film. So I did. I did a few of them. Escape from New York. What you have, and it's your introduction to Snake Plissken. who you're convinced is a bad guy, so you're not, you know, trying to be attached to him. But then midway through the movie, you start to realize that this guy is not the bad guy. It's like the, you know, the government's the bad guy, and he's just the guy that basically, what, like ex-special ops, but became an oi punker. No, I'm just kidding. Like, he's just like a real anti-establishment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it has a really fun, you know, sci-fi concepts, you know what I mean, and throughout the movie. So that stuff always interests me.
And who's the bad guy?
Especially science fiction. Isaac Hayes. It's just like Isaac Hayes is the bad guy, right? Yeah. Duke. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent movie. It's just like a really fun, like, sci-fi B movie, you know, with an amazing performance by Kurt Russell.
Always an amazing performance
by Kurt Russell. Really, you can give this guy almost anything, and he can just like make you buy it and believe it. Anything he's in,
yeah. Even in his fucking like, what is he like? He's got to be like 80 now or something. Yeah,
Kurt Russell.
Let's see. Let's find out.
Is he? He must be 60. 60-ish.
No, yeah, he's got to be what? Well, okay, 51. So he just turned 70.
Oh shit. Huh. Interesting.
Did I fuck that up?
Did you?
Oh, no, yeah, it's 2021. I kept stopping at 2011 like an idiot. Oh, yeah.
70. Okay, cool. What's your next pick?
Coming in at number 3 for Johnny's Carpenter List. It's funny because my name's John and his name is John, too. Big Trouble in Little China. Big Trouble. In Little China.
Interesting.
That's another one of those movies I grew up with, just watching it. I loved how fantastical it was as a kid, and I'd watch it over and over and over again.
Same, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's another one of those, like, movies I remember watching really late at night. Like, I don't remember, like on CBS or something, on Saturdays. They would play Big Trouble in Little China all the time. I remember watching it and thinking, being caught in with all of the, like you said, the fantastical aspects of it. It's just like the martial arts, the costumes, the action, you know what I mean? It wasn't until later that I learned to appreciate the comedy, his performance, and how much of a, like, you know, doofus he is.
Really
pretty
funny.
Much he's like, even though he tries to be like the hero, but in some ways he's like kind of the secondary guy.
But he is the
dumb
hero
American.
He's the guy that kills Lo Pan.
He is.
With his badass,
but in
reflexes.
No way is he like he's resourceful but not useful.
Yeah,
like, does that make sense? Like he's always kind of in the way, causing problems and trouble. I don't know. He's just like a really funny, like, comedic performance in otherwise, like, what would you consider like an action type of movie, right? But yeah. All right. I'm surprised. I thought it was a little low for you.
No, that's
but,
one right. of my tops.
My number 3 is, controversially, Prince of Darkness.
Nice. I was actually thinking you were probably going to put that in your top 5. I like it a lot. I just feel like the the ending doesn't do it enough for me.
Did we talk about the ending?
Maybe.
What episode?
I think
about
so.
You not liking it?
No, not that I don't like it, but it's, for me, it's like, it felt like a catch and release fishing ending. Or like, I mean, I heard somebody else say this in a movie once. It's kind of like masturbating without the release.
What?
No, I just wanted to say that. If anybody could tell me what movie that was, because it's been bugging me for years that I can't remember where I heard that. No, I was just like, okay. I like the ending. I just wanted to actually, I wanted to see it. I wanted to see the world really end. But I think it's appropriate that it ended the way it did. I swear The Sopranos stole that ending.
Yeah.
Get an Alice Cooper cameo.
I love this movie because it's literally every genre. It's horror, it's science fiction, it's a thriller, it has a lot of like Carpenter people that have he's worked with constantly, like Donald Pleasant is in it. And one of my favorite scenes in any movie is the beginning scene where you have two amazing character actors. What's his name? Where's the movie? Fuck. I should have picked up. I should have did all
Kurt
these movies.
Kurt Russell.
Victor Wong and Donald Pleasant are talking about the nature of evil. And to me, that's one of my favorite scenes in any movie. Them just talking about like what evil is and whether, you know, the devil exists or what. And you're just these two outstanding actors who, you know, are probably, you know, who have probably been in a ton of movies. People have seen them before, but I feel like you just see the pros that they're like, you just see two amazing actors just giving and talking about something and just being deadly serious about it. And it, to me, it just sets the tone for that whole movie.
Right.
And then it becomes like a haunted house movie, right? It becomes another in sort of becomes like a
apocalyptic haunted house movie.
Haunted house movie, apocalyptic science fiction movie. I love the fucking tricks with the mirrors and the water devil or whatever the fuck it is.
It's Lucifer himself.
Like all these little, like,
according to the lore.
Yeah. According to the lore, yeah. And it's just like it's just this mismatch of all of these genres. It's just like, and I love how like the ending is so dark, so bleak.
Yeah.
And there's really not much hope. A lot of that like follows, a lot of his endings are very bleak. I don't know if that says about
a little different in the respect that his other movies, they're bleak, but only because you're like, what's happening? Like what actually, like it gives you two choices, like pick your adventure sort of style ending. Like, what do you think's going to happen? Cause that's right. The answer. I mean, he has his answer, mm-hmm. but he wants you to have, this one is pretty like, no, this is what happens. Everyone's fucked. Sorry.
Yeah.
They've been fucked since the beginning.
Yeah. And I think that that's just like, I don't know. To me, that just blew my mind with like the bleak ending and just like the movie itself and the hopelessness. And Carpenter always does this where it doesn't seems very like, suffocating his movies.
Yes.
You know, where it's just like, oh my God, like where like how are they gonna get out of this? Where's the happy ending? Where's it comes? And this movie never comes. Just like all the way through, it's just one it's just one terrible thing after another, you know, like, and there's something very respectable about that. Something I think that differentiates through his filmography. Yeah, but that was my
another number two. Another testament to Carpenter being a fantastic director during this era. And this is, you know, I'm going to be talking about Halloween, the original, for a quick second. He can contain Donald Pleasance theatrics. If that makes any sense. He can tone him down to be something really, really good. Whereas other directors, we're going to learn in our journey through the Halloweens,
yeah,
they don't know how to know how to tone down the Donald Pleasant. You let him run, he'll fucking blast out of there.
Okay,
cool. Okay. Should I go on to my number two?
Yes, go on to your number two.
For Johnny's poop pen, because it's number two. The Johnny Carpenter list. I have The Thing.
The Thing.
That comes in at number two.
Surprise. Wow. Surprise.
Everybody at home is like, what? Turn this shit off.
Turn this garbage off. These are idiots. What are they doing at top five? Where's Halloween reviews?
How are you going to pass up a movie where the dog's the bad guy the whole time at the end? Oh, you know what? That one actually does give you a kind of definitive answer at the end, too, I think. Maybe. Yes and no. That's true. Because you don't know between the two of them. Yeah.
It's ambiguous enough.
Because it could be just like another branch of the thing, right? Because the thing can kind of like distribute another dark itself. Ending.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry. That's the beginning of the movie. That is the end of the prequel, which was, I feel like it should have been better than it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the remake, right? No, God, no. There's only one thing.
No, the newer thing with Mary Elizabeth Winstead is a prequel to this one. And you only find that out because at the very end, yeah, the dog runs away, which is the beginning of The Thing.
Yeah.
So it had a really clever ending. And that movie suffered just because they did all the effects practically, and people were like, oh, this is fucking awesome. But it was during a certain time, and the studio was like, no, we need to make sure everything's CGI because that's what sells. So they redid all the fucking effects and made them CGI, and guess what looked fucking terrible?
Yeah.
But it is what it is. But yep, yeah, Thing, another Kurt Russell.
That happens quite a bit.
Super, I mean, I'm sure everybody who listens to this has seen the movie. Supposed to be a remake of, yeah. What is it called? The Thing from Another Thing Planet from
Another
or
World. Another, yeah, Planet or World. Yeah, one of those.
Great, you get fucking, what, Keith David is also one of the main guys who, like, kind of get a little controversial here, but he is black and he still looks exactly the fucking same if you see him in anything. looks fantastic. You got Wilford Brimley, the diabetes guy. Richard Masser.
the diabetes guy.
Yeah, there's so many people in this. Well, I don't want to say Walker, Texas Ranger, because I don't know how popular that really is.
I don't know.
Guess I could have said Cocoon, but the older we get, the less I feel people know of Cocoon. So,
yeah.
Your number two?
My number two is Big Trouble in Little China, and pretty much it goes back to what I said earlier about it when we were speaking about it. It's just one of those movies that I think is just there was a lot of fun as a kid. And growing up, I was able to appreciate some of the more like clever aspects of it, the movie. And I think it's like a perfect movie.
So John Carpenter notoriously scored all of his own films because he's very, very talented. But this will be the first movie where he got a band together to write the theme song. Is it the best song on earth? Maybe. It might be. Out of context, like if you didn't know it was a score for or like a theme for a movie, would you think it's the best song? I don't think so. Probably not. Okay.
All right. I don't have too much to say. I said what I need to say. Yeah. Go ahead. What is number one?
For Johnny Carpenter list, coming in at number one, we have... In the Mouth of Madness.
Whoa! Controversial.
My number one pick... My favorite Sam Neill movie. I mean,
really? You don't like Jurassic Park? You think this is better than Jurassic Park?
I mean, I barely saw Jurassic Park maybe a year ago. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding, everybody. I was a kid in 1994. I was, even if I didn't want to watch it, they were going to take me to the fucking theater to watch a dinosaur movie.
just the way it was done back then.
Yeah, exactly. Because I was a kid and I was a huge dinosaur nerd.
Whoa, quick. Before, I did not see that movie in the theater.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did not. Wait, I might be lying. Hold on. I like to tell people I don't remember watching it. That or I waited super late and we watched it like at a fucking dollar cinema or something. Because I don't really have any recollection of watching it in a theater. But I remember everybody.
I feel like you would.
I feel like everybody saw it. Everybody in fucking school had fucking dinosaur backpacks and shit. And I was like, I didn't get any the fucking like that movie.
McDonald's, Burger King, any place that had toys for fucking kids' meals.
The board game of Jurassic Park. I remember getting that one Christmas.
Oh, shit.
Where it was like kind of like, what is that game called? What is it? War? No, it wasn't War. It was kind of Clue-esque type game, but without the mystery aspects. It's basically just the whole park, and you had to move from facility to facility, and then there was like cards and the. I didn't really play it very much. It was a little too.
Where were your little
over my head?
Little character pieces, like all the characters, and was Jeff Goldblum naked? Shirtless, I should say.
Should have been. I don't remember playing it very much. Oh, go ahead. What did you say?
I was going to say, what's your favorite dinosaur before we get back to my number one pick?
Okay, I love that question. It's one of my favorite type of questions. Let me see.
The boner sore. It's an STD, folks.
Look it up. It's science. Let me see.
Click off.
I don't remember. I don't have a favorite dinosaurs. I like the ones that were chill or fat and just chill by the water. The one those.
Yeah.
the least aggressive, passive, just eating fucking vegetations and shit. I don't know. I'm not a dinosaur guy.
I think mine's plant eater, the Ankylosaurus, which is like that armored okay. dinosaur that has like the bone for a tail, like with like
snap. Yeah. Has like the hard helmet kind of head.
Yes, yeah.
Is that correct? Yeah. I believe that's
Couldn't tell you what period it's from.
Fascinating.
Oh, the late Cretaceous period, obviously.
Yep.
Sure.
Yeah, everybody knows that. That's an awesome period.
Anyway, that's why I like In the Mouth of Madness, because of all those things we said about Jurassic
Park. Because of fucking Sam Neill. No, I love that movie. I do. Yeah. I do.
It's like the first movie, I think, that really gave me a serious mind fuck as a kid. Or not a kid. When did the movie come out? I mean, it was 90? Still young.
90-ish?
Very young.
Yeah, it's a fucking nut movie. I mean, it's a nutso movie, dude. It's like not... There's some crazy shit going on in there. It's
so you potentially could have seen Sam Neill in Jurassic Park and In the Mouth of Madness at the same within the same year.
No shit.
94. Yeah.
When did Event Horizon come out? Oh, I saw that.
Dude, talk about another movie I fucking love.
I love Event Horizon. You're talking
about
too.
Like Mr. Anderson at his prime, in my opinion. Right?
Yeah.
Little PT Andy over there. Oh wait, no, not to be confused with PT Andy. He's just Paul Anderson, which I still think is Paul W.S.
Anderson.
Yeah.
The good Anderson.
No. Yeah, a serious mindfuck of a film. Fucking Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah,
that's one of those movies, like, anytime I meet somebody and I ask about that movie and they're like, I'm like, you want to watch it? And I swear everybody always has the same reaction. And this is because this movie has aged at this point. And they're like, dude, what the fuck did I just watch? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fucking trip.
Yeah, it's a mindfuck of a movie.
Yeah, like In the Mouth of Madness is right there with it, which... I don't know how much involvement Stephen King actually had with the film, but it is all influenced by different aspects of Stephen King's bookology. Oh, I'm an idiot. Why don't I know the word for this? His books. So that was the whole premise of the film, was just like, if people weren't aware that Stephen King was getting all his influences from A Dark Side, which is also coming from, like, you know, It, where Pennywise is from like a different dark dimension. Yeah. And that one scene I just like would have nightmares about. They're driving in the middle of the night and Sam Neill's not driving. I forgot what her name is. That actress, Julie Carmen. She's driving and she's getting like real tired, and the road looks like it's like narrowed down to where it's just street. And she can only see like the middle line. So she's like driving around the middle of the road. And then to the side of her, she sees this kid on a bicycle with like a card flicking in the spokes. And it's it could be whatever card. Right. And then she like looks at the kid, like ride his bike past her and look at her. And then she's driving like, well, that was weird. It's dark. And the kid disappears. And then the bike appears again. And the kid looks like he's a little bit older with the same card in the spokes, wearing the same exact clothes. And she's like, what the fuck? And the kid looks right at her. And then the third time around, the kid is this old, old man. And the same deal, same clothes, same card in the spokes. And the kid's looking right at her. And she's like, wait, what the fuck? And when she looks in front of her, that same guy who's now an old man hits the car. So she brakes. And then I forgot what the guy says. Like, please, please don't. Like, just let me go. Just let me go. And then she's like, what? She looks up and looks back and the guy's gone. And then he's riding off in the bike into the darkness. And I just could not get that out of my head. I would like go to sleep, have nightmares. That's why I'm fucked up.
That's why I'm fucked up. That's why I can't have any kind of a normal relationship with kids anymore. Or or old man dressed as kids.
Anytime anybody shows up to my place on their bicycle and there's a car in the spoke, I grab that bike. I throw it out in the middle of traffic. Like, I'm sorry, I'll buy you a new bike. Trust me, it's evil.
No bikes.
I have no trauma. More cards and spokes.
It's okay. I'm traumatized.
But yeah, that's my number one. What's your number one?
Nice. My number one, The Thing. Mm-hmm. The Thing. I think this is probably up there with one or two, maybe top three favorite films of all time. A little piece of trivia. It was also released with also another one of my top three favorite films of all time, Blade Runner, on the same day, the same year, 1982.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And they both bombed.
Yeah. They both bombed. Yeah, it's interesting little back history about those, right?
Yeah. That they were huge disasters. And it wasn't until, I don't know, like 15, 20 years later, they became cult hits to genuine hits to where they're making sequels and remakes and prequels now. So eventually, you know, eventually found their audience. But I think what I like about this movie is that, I don't know. I think it's just like, again, it has all of these, you know, veteran actors, actors you would see just in all these other pictures, and they're all just up front and center, right? And I love the concept. Again, it's everyone's tied to one spot, you know. Kind of a haunted house deal where, or there's a killer in the house kind of deal where there's, you know, everyone's getting picked off by this alien. And of course, commonly said that, like, this is probably some of the greatest practical special effects ever put to film. And one of them, and one of the things that always kind of fucked me up was that this alien creature never looked human, even though when it took form, I thought that was such a like brilliant concept when it's, when they finally scare it out of that guy and he's like popping out of the chest and you see it just like forming and just all these legs or whatever. There's like nothing human about it, right? It's really truly. Yeah, it's like, it's just one of these like truly terrifying things, because it's actually like an alien fucked up creature that doesn't look remotely human, you know what I mean, at all. There's like no give whatsoever, and that's just fucked up. There's no heads, there's no like asses or whatever, anything, you know, arms or legs. It's just fucking crazy.
My favorite part of that same scene is the after effect where the head decides to fucking sprout legs that are like reminiscent of like a spider, right? Is that the same scene? Uh-huh. I think it's the same scene.
Yeah.
That one doesn't do too much. They like just, you know, set fire to it. But that was when I was like,
It's just gross. Like fucking crazy. And then you have, again, a very like charismatic Kurt Russell performance, iconic performance.
Yeah, he's like,
and
where is everyone? That's my Kurt Russell. You're welcome, and everyone.
yeah, spot on. Spot on, Kurt Russell. and of course, like, it's a nice segue. This movie actually shows up in Halloween.
It does, yeah. It's true.
In the first one.
So now we talk about Halloween, I mean, finally, after
48 minutes. Yes! This has been going on far too long. I don't know why we jerk ourselves into
this. Okay, though. I feel like we talked about his style and... You know,
I feel like we're gonna have to say I think of like these reviews. I feel like the reviews are gonna be a lot shorter than we think. This is just padding. It's all padded. but yeah, that would be my number one movie, The Thing.
All right. I guess we better start talking about
Halloween
and Halloween 2.
We could almost talk about them together.
Yeah.
You want to do that?
No, yeah, we can do that.
Or we could do them separate. We didn't. Yeah,
I'll say this real quick. There's a, in my opinion, a drastic change in obvious. So
let's keep them separate, because I think you're right. Choices. You're right. There's things specifically I want to say about Halloween 2, and there's things I want to say specifically about Halloween. So you're right. We'll just keep them separate. All right. All right, John. Do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Oh, yeah.
For Halloween 1 and 2. Johnny's 5 word.
So this is 1 and 2.
In no one particular
and two, right?
order.
1 and 2.
Yes. Yes. 1 and 2.
Okay. So I won't ask you again for these. Just so. We'll just jump into 2. Is that right?
Shit.
Yeah, all right. This is making the sausage moment for the skeleton boys here.
Well, I can do one for Halloween 1 for sure, and this would have been my number one pick. No, I'll go with this one first. For Halloween 1, I have Dude in Mask Sees Everything.
Yes. Yes, yes.
For Absolutely. Halloween 2, Small Town Has 6 Cops. That's why they can't stop him. He's like real smart about man. What town he's like, whatever, it's supposed to be like something Ohio or like, I forgot where it's at already.
Illinois. Illinois. This is the only Illinois town that has palm trees in the opening shot. Yeah. So.
I think I have more Halloween 2 things than Halloween 1. For my number one pick for Halloween, it's Captain Kirk Loves Halloween Tricks.
Ah, that's a good one. That's a good one. I like it. Why don't we table some of the Halloween 2 ones and then we can...
Okay, well, we'll come back. I only have that. Halloween 2 ones, I think.
Okay, cool. All right. So, Halloween. John, do you want to just give your first thoughts?
It's like one of my all-time favorites. I don't know if it would have made the list if we weren't reviewing it.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. Probably not, honestly. But it is like definitely... I think the reality is you don't have a lot of these Carpenter movies without the success of this film.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep. That's 100% true.
And you wouldn't have Carpenter able to do all his own scores without the success of the score of this film as well. Which is like... Mm-hmm. A pretty famous bit of trivia where he did a test. He screened it for a test audience without any scoring, and nobody liked it. They thought it was a shit film. They're like, it's fucking boring. Like, nothing about it's scary. And then he did a rescreening of it with the score that he had written. And I don't know if this is like to show the execs or whatnot, but people were like terrified.
Mm-hmm.
So the magic of music. It can bring people together, or it can make them all shit themselves at the same time.
Yeah. Halloween. I think this movie is so iconic that I think it's so seeped into pop culture. I think even if you haven't seen this movie, it's been referenced everywhere in pop culture to where you probably feel like you have seen this movie. Everybody knows like the plot, the general premise of this movie, even though they probably remember some of the final details. And I think so much of that is laid on just the amazing accidents or brilliance of John Carpenter.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like just he's literally inventing slasher movies, mainstream. He's literally making like mainstream a slasher movie, right? Bringing it to the forefront. He's in kind of making teen horror movies too at the same time. He's making iconic horror icon, you know, with Michael Myers. He's
gonna be an early example of like the cold open, or like you're introduced to the killer, but obviously the killer is like a kid, right? And when you see Michael Myers, famous Michael Myers, he's 21 by that point, but that intro, the cold open, and then you get like the credit sequence, which instead of putting credits over like an actual scene, it's just that thing where the pumpkin is decaying the closer you get to it.
Yeah, and he's like, stumbled upon this like POV murderish shot, which the first time it was ever done.
Okay.
Which, I mean, it's
there was a film called...
The Eyes of Laura Mars. I was going to mention that.
The Peeper or something like that. Where most of the film is just the POV of the killer, but you don't know he's a killer until like towards the end.
I know that he wrote a movie called The Eyes of Laura Mars with, I think, Faye Dunaway. He only wrote it. He didn't direct it. Ivan Kirshner directed it. Who went on to direct Empire Strikes Back, famously. And it has the same POV. So he clearly wrote the screenplay for that movie and it showed up in that movie, which was years before Halloween, and then he was able to use the same effect again for this movie.
Real quick, please nobody look up Peeper, because I just looked it up and it's clearly not the same fucking movie. The movie I'm talking about does not star Michael Caine and Natalie Wood. My bad. I forgot what it's called already. But yes. Yeah. He's it's a fantastic. I mean, I think it's a fantastic film. And then if you really love that movie, when you watch the quote unquote, like revamp of the sequel, right? Which is the Halloween that came out a couple of years ago with Jamie Lee again.
You get a
bunch of like scenes that are like directly taken from the original Halloween, and it gives you a lot of these like energetic yes moments. So I will say, I know we're not going to review that movie, is really fun and really good in my opinion, not because it's as scary or as like tense driven as the first one, but because you get more of these like fuck yeah moments. It's a very nostalgic movie.
And I think that there's just like at every point, I mean, this is like clearly every point in production and direction and post-production, like, is, I just feel like every choice is just correct. Yes. Right. Like, this is why I think this movie is just so successful. Like you said about like him able to just come up with a score that he wrote and then just apply it. And it becomes like this legendary theme that is like synonymous with not only this series, but just in general. That's that piece of music that he wrote is just, seeped in our pop culture, right? Like everybody knows it,
you know? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like it's synonymous with this holiday, right? Or even horror movies in general.
And I was going to say, this movie too, I think what makes it scary no matter what is every moment where Michael Myers kills someone, he always catches them off guard. And that was like, this is fucking brilliant. Mm-hmm. Can you say that about the second one? Sort of, but not really. Well,
there's definitely also some things about that movie. And of course, it launches Jamie Lee Curtis' career as well. So I think she's perfect in this part, right? And I think that also he wrote the screenplay with Deborah Hill, which was his wife at the time. And I think that she had a lot of influence in the script, working together. I feel like, from what I think I read, that she worked on all of the dialogue for the women, which I think is important. And then he wrote, of course, like all of the action stuff. Yeah.
It was very, in my head, like very well received for what teenagers are supposed to be like, you know? I appreciate that Jamie Lee is supposed to be kind of a nerd, I guess, is the idea. Which also I think kind of influences the idea of the virgin gets to stay alive, which was not intentional in this movie. It's just, I think that kind of influenced it for later films. Like, oh, if you're a virgin, you get to stay alive at the end of the film.
Yeah.
These other people, which was, were not, so that's where they died.
I think what I read was that, of course, that's a common trope, right? That like, and it's not only this movie, it's other series as well. Like Friday the 13th is also kind of, what is it? They're also kind of coined with it, that idea that like if people are having sex, they're going
to
be murdered.
But then, to be fair,
sort of thing, right?
I feel like the
virgins just to stay alive.
Jason Voorhees died because the camp counselors decided to fuck. And they weren't totally paying attention to him.
Yeah, and I think what I read was that Carpenter never intended any of those allusions or in his work. I think he mainly did it because what else do, like, he wanted a reason for them to be distracted and not paying attention. So he's thinking like teenagers, what do you think about, right? Like think about like fucking and sex and boys and girls and, you know what I mean? And drinking, and they're just completely in their own little world and where they're not paying attention. They don't think that there's a serial killer, right? Like some crazy guy who's going to murder them. It's kind of the basic, what I understand is kind of like the basic idea between a lot of
Donald Pleasant would say,
the setups for those.
What I saw on that child was pure evil.
He is,
you know what? He's like
interesting,
he's really
actor,
good in this
for sure.
And
he's
if
good,
we're gonna segue into the really second,
I think he's no. Let's just quickly say, like, I think he's probably the worst psychiatrist.
Oh yeah,
ever. He's completely, when we meet this guy, he's completely like just ready to fucking murder his patient. He spent talking to him and he's
like
convinced and
11
he's
years.
Be,
I forgot how long it was. I gave up on him. And then you get to see him in Halloween 2 and it's like, oh, I have some 5-word summaries that actually apply to how I feel about Donald Pleasant in Halloween 2.
It, if you want to move on to Halloween 2, I'll just sum up or quickly sum up. Like, I think it's one of those movies that, like, it's iconic. It's like a perfect example of what a whole genre spawned out of this movie, right? It birthed a million copycat movies. It's sort of a standard. I'm sure anybody listening to a horror podcast has probably seen it. To me, I'm going to be bold and say that this is like, if you want to know how to make a horror movie, this is the horror movie to look at. I have all the little turns. And I think it's probably like the Citizen Kane of horror movies.
Yeah, there you go. I agree. 100% agree.
But yeah, no, it's one of... You can literally dissect this movie piece by piece and just see how it's influenced so much of our culture, pop culture. So,
even though I will say, for me, it's up there with Evil Dead, which I know is not nearly as well produced. And I know Evil Dead like technically came out in like 80, 81, but they had been making it since like 79, 78.
Yeah.
So, all right. Evil Dead 2. Evil Dead 2. Halloween 2. God, I just told everybody my favorite movie of all time. My bad. Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn.
Okay. I have... John, do you want to give us...
three more Halloween 2 5-word plot summaries.
Coming in at number 3 for Halloween 2, Michael wants to be Jason.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Coming in at number 2, Dr. Loomis, soap opera star. You want to talk about overacting? Holy shit. And number 3, or number 1, I guess, doesn't need to make sense.
No.
It was a money grab.
Literally from the first, like, shot, not even the first shot of this movie, the first, like, second title card, this movie just screams money grab. Do you know why? Because it says Dino De Laurentiis, who literally is synonymous with making the trashiest movies and will literally put his name on anything if he thinks he can make a buck. He's like literally one of those like film producers who just like, he's like money first kind of guy. He doesn't care about the quality of the movies. He doesn't care about, you know, the artistic sides of any of these things. It's all about money, boobies, violence. You know what I mean? And we can sell it we're going to get it out there. That's my opinion of Dino De Laurentiis. So that literally was the first sign that this movie is cash grab. And what you do, and also sets the precedent, like what you not supposed to do in a sequel.
Fucking ruin it. make Donald Pleasant weird long takes of, like, there's a part where he's like, we have to get out of here. We have to find Michael, blah, blah, blah. And then he's holding a gun, like, in a weird way. And they track shot him to, like, the side of a house. And he, like, walks and kind of runs, sort of. And then he stops, looks around, and then walks a little bit further and looks around. And then he, like, runs a bit and then turns and looks around some more while holding the gun in an awkward position and then walks to the side of the house. And I was like, what was the point of this, like, what felt like a 45-second moment?
And Donald Pleasant, unfortunately, is just let loose. Like, he is just like no restraint. He is completely, like you said, just everywhere in this movie. Just comically, just like over the top in every single thing he's doing.
Because
here.
What if you
no direction
needed, or if you really watch these movies back to back, they're supposed to flow seamlessly. But there's like a dramatic change in like the demure, like the acting styles. And I don't know. This movie was kind of a lot of dumb, like horror moments where he like sets these. They were like, what, hot tubs? Like, are there hot tubs in hospitals that
We'll definitely get to that. The second thing why I think this is probably one of the worst sequels I've ever seen was, it happens early on, is that we spend an enormous amount of time with Michael Myers at the beginning of this movie. Like, this, meaning like, we see him, in the beginning of this movie, he's like, moving from house to house. He's like, you mentioned, like he sees the cops. He sees Loomis. Which is
very
Loomis.
Impressive because he got his eyes shot out.
And then he's like hiding.
In the first one.
He did. And then he stalks and kills some random girl. And it's just like they did the thing you're never supposed to do in horror movies, which is like reveal the monster, right? Show too much of it. And at this, I mean, literally, he's like in every scene in this fucking movie, like every season, he's just like everywhere. It's just completely, it's the shark at the bottom of the ocean, right? It's like Jaws. It's just, you see it, it's everywhere. It's just, and it's just
like, it's definitely obviously different. Like, you know, like
it's a different actor. I don't know. It's a different performance. It's, you know, definitely just completely strikes out. But I will say one of the absolute funniest moments happens about 20 minutes in, where Loomis is being hysterical and over the top about pointing the gun around in the cop car. And then he tells the cop, like, who's that over there? I don't know. I'm like, all right, get him. I'll shoot him. And he runs down he starts chasing, like, what we think is Michael to the street. And out of nowhere, another cop car comes burling in and smashes and kills this fucking
That's right.
kid.
That shit made me laugh so hard. Because for some reason, that was a popular Halloween costume for reasons.
That year.
I mean, it wasn't in the first movie.
No sense. But That's literally when like the logic of this movie just like completely falls apart. And it's like, was it him? Was it? I can't tell. It's just like this burning face and Matt. I can't tell. It's just like, what the fuck is going on? That was absolutely one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen. Only come to find out. Some kid, right? It was like some 17-year-old kid. And literally, okay, so the scene is that the cop is there. They're looking at him, burned to a crisp, some child. And then literally another cop comes and tells him, oh, your daughter, they killed your daughter. They literally, no reaction to what this burning child on another car. Just jump into the car, Donald Pleasant like fucking gets in the back seat and they burrow off, and with no repercussions, they're clearly like accessories to like a homicide murder, and they don't have any kind of responsibility for it, and they're off, and then we gotta move the plot along of this
and
movie.
Again, I will say, I think this movie starts to solidify Donald Pleasant's character as being equally as immortal and unkillable as Michael Myers. Because we will see him many more times throughout this franchise. He is just as impossible to kill. This movie was, for lack of a better word, fucking whack. Like, everything about it. Like, towards the end, we're like, she's Michael's sister. I mean, brother, whatever. She's Michael's sister, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, it was in this movie, really? And then I was like, okay. Let me see if I remember how they make it make sense. No, they just mentioned it.
Like, they just mentioned it,
He wants to kill her. I'm like, well, then why do you fucking kill all those other people?
It is.
Come on.
So, like, the scenes play so phony. The whole setup of it is so phony and so, like, jammed in there for, like, shock purposes, right? And then we get to, like, they end up taking like Jamie Lee Curtis's character to some fucking hospital. Dude, some fucking whack ass hospital.
Like the first
makes no
part of the
fucking
movie,
sense. Everybody's behavior is
first part
fucking
of the movie
ridiculous.
Felt like it took forever, like around the houses. And you get to the fucking hospital, which they call the clinic, by the way. This is a full on fucking hospital. And then like a majority of the movie takes place there. And then I think the rest of the movie takes place there. It feels like a whole separate movie where Michael Myers
he's
is
literally
getting
like,
everybody in the hospital.
He,
or like
and Michael Myers
the night shift.
From this point forward in the series, like just becomes unkillable thing, right? We don't even know what the fuck he is. And then he's also like the smartest guy, right? And the quietest guy because he's able to have perception of cutting everybody's tires and brakes and being really witty and getting ahead of like all of these things. And I'm like, when did he have time to do this? I like, what's his,
well, I mean, is that his motivation? I know they kept saying that's what it was because he kept sneaking around different parts of the hospital instead of going to like the main part, which was super easy to find her. Cause everybody else could find her. And he's just like murdering everyone else in the hospital for reasons. Like what that part I was going to mention earlier where he like turns up the heat in some hot tubs like in the hospital. I started thinking, I was like, is this what they use to like disinfect the clothes? But I don't know. And they're like these two people are going to go in there and like potentially fuck or whatever. And Michael Myers kills the guy. He turns up the hot tub thermostat to boiling, right? Like the thermostat says boiling in big red letters. And they do this whole awkward scene where she's trying to tell him like, sorry, Tiger, not anymore. It's not happening. And then she's trying to like say sorry because he's not talking, but it's Michael Myers with like his hand around her. And she starts to like suck on his like dirty fingers. Like she didn't notice his hands were like fucking filthy. And then when he like kills her because she's like, he like starts to dunk her head into the boiling water. And in my head, I was like, okay, to drown her. But then her like her skin is starting to peel off, which was also really bad makeup. I'm sorry, but it was. And like finally her whole face is like fucking like burned off and she's dead. And his hand is perfectly fine. So if you want to talk about other parts that don't make any sense. He's
been shot like 9 or 10 times.
Yeah. He doesn't burn. His skin doesn't burn.
Fucking been stabbed. I don't know how many times. And you know, I never paid attention. This was a new revelation for me that, what does Loomis say? That he thinks he's a demon, right? Some fucking Celtic demon now. That's how they're going to
can shove a fucking wire hanger into his eye and then Loomis can shoot what I could only believe is his eyeballs in the first movie because there's no holes in the mask other than to where his eyes are coming out. He's like, I guess don't aim for his eyes, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Aim for literally any other part of his body, possibly. But then what happens? What Loomis is like, I'm going to sacrifice myself, I guess, and tells Jamie Lee to run out. And they both start to like release nitrous oxide or something like that. Yeah, and then they both blow up, and Jamie Lee survives, and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
Until Halloween 4. Not 3, but 4.
4. Everybody returns. And I think that from what I understand, John Carpenter, like, he was persuaded to write the sequel because he felt like he got gypped on the payment, the payment of the movie, the original. He felt like he should have made more money than what was actually intended because it was actually one of probably the biggest independent, from what I understand, the biggest independent movie from budget to what it earned. The equivalent of being like, it was probably like maybe like a $10-15 million movie made now, and it made $150 million, right? So it's a huge contrast. So there was a lot of money he felt like he was owed. So he's like, fuck it. Yeah, I'll write a sequel. I got to make more money, right? And he said he struggled with the script. And I think at this point, I think he was also divorcing Deborah Hill, who had a big contributing factor for a lot of the script. He believed he wrote it with a six-pack in hand. So he just never really felt like it came together. And one of the things he wanted to do was pass this movie on and sort of take like a producer role. So he wanted to like shepherd a director on, which he said a producer did with him. So he wanted to kind of do that for the next guy. But unfortunately, the director, Rick, what was his name? Rosenthal? He wasn't very happy. He wasn't very happy with his stuff. So he ended up, from what I understand, Carpenter ended up having to like reshoot a lot of reshoots and added actually that hot tub scene you were talking about. He actually included that. And from the objection of the director, and because I think what they were saying was one of the actually better interesting things about Halloween is that there's no gore or violence to a larger extent. It's all mood, right? The whole piece is just moody. 2, on the other hand, is very, very keen about showing slit throats and
to a fault like, too. Yeah,
you know, burned faces and also and say all this, the you know first what I mean. One,
you're aware that he's around, but you're not expecting him unless you've seen the movie. And in the second one, these scenes are clearly like, oh, he's about to pop up. Like, he's here somewhere because they're all set up that way. Like, you know he's there. You know he's there. The first one, you're like, when is he going to pop up? Because they always introduce like, oh, he's here, but he was never there.
Yeah. And there's even... even a fucking jump scare with a cat.
I was going to say, the one of the early instances of the black cat
really
jump
bottom
scare.
Of the barrel fucking scare tropes there.
Sucked.
It really, really sucked. I feel like it's all downhill from here, right?
That's the beauty of it. You get, well, I mean, we'll get to 3 and 4, but then we get the early aughts Halloweens, which should be interesting.
Yeah, I suspect these movies are going to quickly fall apart. I'm hoping, so I'll say this, and like what I told you before we started recording, like I vividly remember these two movies and three. The first three I've seen a ton. But 4, 5, and 6, I'm hoping to discover something interesting more than what I suspect, because I don't remember a lot of these movies, because I think, well, like I was telling you earlier, like they were movies that I saw pieces of, but I don't remember like them completely. So I'd like to actually now sit down and objectively look at them and, you know, quietly judge them. So let's see what if they're going to surprise me. Maybe these movies, I'm going to give each of them a fair shot. So to see what type of movies they are.
We'll see. And then
going forward,
you guys can look forward to another 2-hour episode of the Spooky Skeleton Boys.
Yeah. Okay. We didn't do any spoiler segments. So
just spoiler. Just the second one sucks. Fine. The first one's great.
Yeah. 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 Okay. How many sexy spooky bones do you give Halloween?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie.
For Halloween, Johnny gives 10 out of 10.
Whoa.
Sexy, spooky Halloween bones.
Wah, wah, wah. I don't want that.
And Halloween 2 gets 2. That's all I get. Sorry. Sorry. 2 bones. Bye. Bye, Halloween 2.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree completely. I think I'm also going to give it 10 sexy spooky bones.
Whoa.
For Halloween. And Halloween 2, I'm going to just say like one bone. So bad. It's so bad because I feel like they took all the examples in this movie and just like repeated them over and over and over again.
I roll the whole fucking time.
Yeah. It was all about lining the pockets of Dino De Laurentiis, trying to make and squeeze out as much fucking money as possible out of these movies. I feel like he did the same thing with the Hannibal Lecter Silence of the Lambs series. He did exact same thing. He is, I don't know how this show became about, which I don't like Dino De Laurentiis, I know. I mean, he's. That just blew my mind. I knew this movie was bad. I didn't know Dino De Laurentiis had anything to do with it, you know, and it just that makes a lot of sense. All right. Okay. On that note. Okay. Thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to